Well, if you haven't figured out by now, the topic for this morning is going to be anger. This series is all about unmasking. It's about unmasking who we really are, being able to reveal who we really are, and be able to get that out there, because until you're able to really talk about it, discuss it, and say, this is who I am, you'll never be able to deal with it. And so over the course of the next couple weeks, we're going to be looking at several of the topics that we go into detail every single week at Celebrate Recovery, all of the hurts, habits, and hang-ups that continue to mess us up in life. And so today we're going to be talking about anger. Getting angry is the easiest thing you're going to do all day. Like today, whatever you got planned for the rest of the day, getting angry is going to be the easiest thing for you to do all day long. And you're going to have plenty of opportunities. You're going to get in the car. You're going to go somewhere. Let's just talk about tomorrow morning. Maybe your day's already done. I don't know. Monday morning, you'll get in the car, and somebody will cut you off. And, of course, right then you're going to get, I don't know, you won't call it angry. You'll say you are, I don't know, what is it, miffed? I'm miffed. I'm peeved. I don't know. It's funny, we have 1,000 words for anger because we don't want to admit that we're have issues with anger. So we say, well, I was just a little miffed. I was a little aggravated by that. Then you stop off, you want to get some coffee, you go to Starbucks, and you're next in line, you got somewhere to be, you got to get to work, and you're thinking, so I'm next in line, okay, one more in front of me, and the guy in front of you is ordering for the whole office. Okay, you may be a hero and savior to them, but right now, it's a little aggravating that you're kind of like doing this. I really thought I was next, but can you just let me go? I mean, I just need, this happens to me all the time. See, I love to get a donut before church on Sunday, and the place I go is a self-serve place. But in the summer, a bunch of tourists show up, and they form this line, and they're all buying for these, like, you know, they're all buying like 5 dozen donuts each. I just want one. Can I just get one and go? Can I just get? And I don't ever get angry. I get aggravated. I get miffed. I get peeved. You name the word. Then later on that day, you're at work and somebody maybe mentions your name, but you're not really sure the context, and so just instantly you are offended, right? You know, it's easy. Everybody's like getting offended about everything right now. And then you find out once you get to work also that the person who you work with has called in sick, so now their entire workload is given to you as well. And so you're not angry, you're just frustrated that this always seems to happen, that their workload becomes your workload, nobody ever takes anything off of your plate. You get through the whole day, you finally get home, look around, the kids aren't in school because they hadn't been in school in who knows how long. There's just a few chores you asked them to do, but they haven't done it, so you're a little frustrated that that hasn't happened. And then, you know, your significant other shows up, and they say, honey, are you okay? Yeah, everything's fine. You don't look fine. You seem kind of irritable. Okay, well, I'm not irritable. Now I'm angry. See, anger is going to happen at some point to you during the day because it's so easy. It's just easy to get angry. I love what Time Magazine had an article about anger. And there the author said this, anger is the lazy person's emotion. It's quick, it's binary, and it's delicious. It is true. It is the lazy person's emotion. The easiest thing to do is to get angry. Like, thinking of the right discipline for a child is hard. Getting angry at what they did, easy. Thinking of the right solution for something at work is hard. Getting angry about what's going on is easy. Finding a better route to work or a better way to drive or, you know, a more defensive tactic in driving or understanding other drivers is hard. All those things are hard. It takes a lot of training. Getting mad at other drivers? Easy. It's easy to get angry. The easiest thing you will do all day is get angry. Now, not all anger is bad. I mean, some anger is good, because we read in the Bible in Ephesians chapter 4. That's what we're going to be looking at this morning. I'm going to keep going back to Ephesians 4. So if you want to open up somewhere, open up Ephesians chapter 4. In verse 26, it says, in your anger, do not sin. Here he's actually quoting back in the it's actually Psalms 4:4. First mentions this, and so Paul here is quoting back to the Old Testament, says, in your anger, do not sin. So the first thing we get out of that is that anger is not a sin. It's not a sin to be angry. Now, is it a lazy emotion? Yes. But also it is a dangerous emotion. Anger is a very dangerous emotion. The same way that fire is dangerous and must be respected, yes, there can be a purpose for it and it can serve a good use. However, if you don't respect fire, fire is going to cause a lot of problems, right? I mean, that's why you don't play with matches. You shouldn't be playing with anger. And so anger is dangerous because of how your brain processes things that come in. What happens is whenever you have any kind of stimulus, any kind of input, you smell, see, hear, anything, it comes into your brain. And the thalamus first kind of takes this information. It's sort of like this processing part of your brain, and it sends the information over to the neocortex to sort of logically figure out what it is that it's seen, what it has heard, what it has smelled, and figure out what the right thing to do with it is. And along the way, then it also gets passed over to the amygdala, which is sort of like your seat of emotions, if you will. Now, every once in a while, the brain will get some sort of stimulus, and instead of going to the neocortex, it'll send it to the neocortex and to the amygdala at the exact same time. And Daniel Goleman's got a book called Emotional Intelligence, where he talks about how sometimes your amygdala kind of acts like a terrorist on a plane where he decides he's going to hijack your whole body. In other words, he's going to let his emotions just rule and just do whatever the heck it wants to do. And whenever that happens, you're going down a path of uncontrolled anger, which is why anger is such a dangerous emotion, because it's so easy for your emotions to take over your brain. It's so easy for your emotions to take over all sense of reason or logic, which is why we do things that are illogical and unreasonable, or dare I say, foolish and dumb when we're angry. And this isn't just me talking. This isn't your spouse talking. This is other people talking. This is God talking. Over in Proverbs chapter 14, 29, it says, whoever is patient has great understanding. Or some verses say, whoever is patient shows wisdom. Why? Because you're giving yourself some time to process, to keep your amygdala from going nuts, to give your neocortex a little bit of time to process through things. You need to be patient. You need to wait a minute. But then it goes on, it says, but the one who's quick-tempered looks like a fool. And earlier in Proverbs 14, it says, acts like a fool too. So in other words, you look like a fool and you act like a fool whenever you are quick-tempered. Whenever you allow yourself to emotionally respond in anger, you're going to be doing something very foolish. And all of us have done that. I mean, all of us have some situation where we have acted a fool or done something foolish, said something foolish, something we regret. And this is not a time for audience participation. Keep your mouth shut while you're sitting here watching at home, wherever you might be. This is time for you to be thinking about yourself right now and just say, okay, how is it that, what are some things that I have done to act a fool? No elbows right now. No elbows, no finger pointing, nothing, no texting right now. All of us, though, have said and done something foolish when we were angry, because it's so easy for us to react emotionally rather than intellectually. Now, other thing about this is, so it's not a sin to get angry, and yes, God does get angry. You can look through multiple passages where you see Jesus get angry. You can see passages in the Old Testament where God gets angry. However, I want to go back, and I want to focus on a verse just for a moment, back in Exodus 34. Exodus 34, I think it's verse 6. There's something that God says to Moses. God is revealing himself to Moses. And this is right after the whole Ten Commandments were given. Moses comes down, finds that they built this calf out of gold and a lot of issues. And, Moses breaks the Ten Commandments. Well, he goes back, and Moses and God have this conversation. And God says to Moses this. He says, Moses, something you need to know about me. He says, I am compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in love. What you need to know about me, Moses, is I am compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in love. And this is who I am. This is my nature. And by the way, this is quoted again and again and again in the Old Testament. You'll see this come up again and again and again. I know Psalm 103 quotes this. I know Jonah quotes this over in Jonah chapter 4. The reason why Jonah was so frustrated with his mission to Nineveh was because he says, God, this is why I didn't want to come, because I knew you were compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding love. This is why I didn't want to come. And Psalm 103, when it's talking about our sin and our position, our standing before God, he comes back and he says, God, I know that you are slow to anger and abounding in love. You're gracious and you're compassionate. And so what we need to understand about God and his nature is he's compassionate. In other words, he patiently is understanding of our imperfections. It's a lot easier to have compassion for somebody when you are patiently understanding their imperfections. When you see somebody, we often have compassion for a child when they make mistakes. Why? Because we are patiently understanding of their imperfections. We know they don't know any better. And I often say, none of us know any better. All of us have a sinful and fallen nature. It says, so compassionate and abounding in love. This is that Old Testament word which means a committed, faithful love. This is where God says, I have made a covenant with you. I'm committed to you. I'm not leaving you no matter what. Even if I get angry, it doesn't mean I'm giving up on you. Even if I get angry and I don't like what you did, it doesn't mean that I don't like you. It just means that we need to deal with this. And so it says that God is compassionate and gracious and abounding in love. And also it says in the middle there, he is slow to anger. God, it takes God a long time to get angry. When God gets angry, you could always say, well, it's about time, right? something people rarely say about us, right? Like, well, it's about time you got angry about this. No, no, no. We're usually quick to get angry, which is why James earlier in James chapter 1 says that every one of us should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Now, I don't think he knew anything about the neocortex and the amygdala or any of that kind of stuff. He just looked at it and said, you need to give yourself a little bit of time to process. Because if you go too quickly, the amygdala just jumps in and he hijacks the whole thing and you end up making dumb decisions and saying dumb things. So be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, just like God is slow to become angry. If you want to use this classification, well, it's not a sin to be angry because God gets angry. Well, just also remember, God is very slow to get angry. It takes him a long time to get to that point. Now, there is something called righteous anger. People always say, what about righteous anger? There is some about righteous anger. Righteous anger is a response to injustice and wrong behavior. Righteous anger is a response to injustice and wrong behavior. This is what moves God to anger. When God sees injustice, he is moved to anger. When God sees people doing wrong, he is moved to anger. In a slow way, of course. You know, full of compassion, with a committed, unfailing love. And this ought to be the only thing that moves us to anger, but it isn't. That's why when you go over later in the book of James, James chapter 4, he asks this question. James chapter 4, verse 1, he says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? What causes fights and quarrels among you? Now, I know immediately you're thinking to yourself, James, that's the wrong question. It's not what, it's who. Ask me that question. Who causes quarrels among you? I can point them out to you right now. I can give you the list. I can give you the names and I can give you why. If you ask me who causes quarrels, who makes me angry, I can tell you that right now. There's some people, just the thought of them just boils my blood. So if you want to ask me who, I can tell you who. But you're asking the wrong question. You're asking what. And James is kind of getting back. He said, no. There is a root cause to why you get angry, and it's not a who. And as long as you think it's a who, as long as you think it's somebody else that's getting you angry, what you're going to conclude is, they're the one who makes me angry. I can't control them. Therefore, I can't control my anger. See how that works? As long as you think it's a who that's getting you angry, you're going to conclude you're not in control of your anger. But James doesn't ask who. He asks what. What is causing your anger? What is causing the fights and the quarrels among you? And then he goes on. He says, don't they come from the battles that desire from the desires and the battle within you? Doesn't the anger and the quarrels and the argument that you, doesn't it all come from a desire that battles within you? To which your answer is, no. Her fault. His fault, right? We don't want to admit that we have an issue inside. And he said, no, the issue is inside. At the end of the day, he's going to go on to say, listen, you get mad and you argue because you want your own way. There's always an issue of pride that somehow comes in. Pride plays a key component in it. And here's the issue. Anytime that we think we have righteous anger, we usually deviate from a path of godly, righteous, sinless anger because of pride. Somewhere along the way, pride enters in along the way, which is why earlier in the book of James, James says this, the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. James chapter 1, verse 20, the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Why? Because the anger of man is more concerned with man than it is with God. Like, when I get angry, although it may start off, I may convince myself that I have righteous anger because what happened was wrong or what happened was unjust, somewhere along the way, pride will enter in and it will deviate from simply righting a wrong or creating just where there's been injustice or restoring peace. And somewhere along the way, there'll be some issue of, I want to get revenge. I want to assert my rightness. I want to make sure that I am heard. I want to be able to vent my frustration. I want you to feel like I feel. Perhaps Aristotle said it best when he said, anybody can get angry. That's easy. But getting angry with the right person, to the right extent, at the right time, with the right motive, in the right way, that's not easy. Once again, he says, getting angry, that's easy. But to get angry with the right person, to the right extent, to the right time, with the right motive, in the right way, that's not easy. Which is why it's nearly impossible to get anger right. To get all those lists of things right. It's nearly impossible to be angry with the right person at the right time, in the right way, to the right extent, with the right motive. It's really, really hard for sinful humanity to ever get to that place because somewhere along the way, our sin is going to enter in. And here's the worst part about it. You can't see it. It's hard for you to detect it in your own self. And so what's worse for Christians oftentimes is you'll be convinced that you're displaying righteous anger, but somewhere along the way, pride or self has entered in along the way. Now, the best place to, or, you know, so there's first of all, we all have to admit that it's nearly impossible for us to be angry and not sin. It's possible, theoretically, but because of pride, somewhere along the way, there's probably going to be some error, some mistake somewhere along the way that you make in doing it. Now, there's a difference, though, between sinning when you're angry and having a problem of anger, or anger becoming a problem that needs to be addressed, or having an anger management problem. And probably the best place to begin to look to see if you have an anger management or anger problem, not because all of us make mistakes when we get angry, right? But for some people, you would describe them as an angry person. You know, like you'd say, well, what's Bill like? Oh, well, he's nice, he's generous, he's kind. What's Sarah like? Oh, well, she's sweet, she's compassionate. Oh, what's like? Oh, he's just angry. Now, when it gets to the point where somebody just describes you as angry, that's when there's a problem. That's why we have a group at Celebrate Recovery, just for folks who are struggling with anger issues. Because at some point, you need to go outside of what you've been doing, because what you've been doing is not working. It's not working for you, and it's definitely not working for the people around you. And the people who know it most are the people you live with. You might be able to put on a good act while you're at work, professionally, because professionally, your neocortex reminds you you'll get fired if you let things go off the handle. It's really kind of funny how powerful your neocortex actually can be when you allow it to be. Your neocortex will rationally come in and say, you can't say that right now. You can't say that to your boss. You can't say that to your client. You can't say that to your customer. But for whatever reason, when you get home with your spouse or with your kids, it's like, say what you want. And all of a sudden, we take off all of those filters, all of those restraints, and we allow ourselves to emotionally fly off the handle. The other hard part about recognizing your anger issues is who's going to tell you? Because if you have an anger issue, they probably don't want to tell you. So this morning, hopefully, you'll be able to listen to some of these things and just ask yourself, is this me? Is this something I have an issue with? Now, there's two different kinds of anger problem issues. There's aggressive anger, then there's passive-aggressive anger. Now, we'll start with aggressive anger because that's the easiest one. That's the obvious one. It's one everybody sees. When anger has gotten to the point where it is determining or it is defining your character or your disposition, what's happened is it's degenerated into what we would call a stronghold. Last week I talked about a stronghold. That's that place, that's that thing, that's that hurt, that habit, that hang-up that is almost becoming a permanent residence in your life that you need to address. And here's are some of the signs or symptoms or pictures of aggressive anger. When you get to the place of where anger becomes a part of who you are, what you'll find is that your sense of right and wrong is impaired to the point where you're never wrong. Your sense of right and wrong is impaired to the point where you think you have a perfect moral compass, a perfect sense of justice, and therefore your idea or sense of rightness and justice is always right, and you're never at fault. Now, occasionally you're at fault, but the way somebody else has handled something was far more at fault than what you did. And so you have an anger, the signs that you may have an anger issue is when all these things are starting to come together. So that's one of them. You're very skilled at blaming, intimidating, abusing others with what you say and how you act. All your discussions eventually become one-sided, where you're the only person who can speak, you're the only person who can air their opinions. Listening becomes very, very hard. That's why James says, be quick to listen, slow to speak. No. If you knew what they had to say, you would know we don't have to listen to them. So here. And besides, what they're saying is wrong anyway, so let me just get out what's right. At least that's the way we're thinking. You're quick to threaten consequences. This isn't just an apparent child situation. This could be in any relationship where you're quick to threaten some sort. You keep this up, here's what I'm going to do. You do this, I'm going to do this. You're quick to threaten consequences. Things seem to escalate quickly in your life. That's one of those funny lines that always comes out in movies. Well, that escalated quickly. It's like the most benign things seem to happen. All of a sudden, it's go time. Jim Rome always has this bit. He's a sports talk show guy. He always talks about likes to fight guy, how he says, it's no fun going anywhere with likes to fight guy because everybody's looking at him wrong. Everybody's the reason to go. He's always looking to get in a fight, always looking to argue. And maybe you're likes to fight guy or maybe you're likes to fight girl, where everything's a reason to go. Any comment, anything that's said, anything look is always perceived to being something. The reaction is always disproportionate to the offense. That's where somebody spills milk and you go off on them for spilling milk, for being clumsy, for not caring, for messing up the whole table. We then go into a whole list of recounting every event of anything that's been spilled ever before in that home, every instance of them spilling, everything needs to be done to clean it up, the fact that they didn't clean up the last one. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. Here's another big thing. Anger is a problem when forgiveness and restoration isn't the goal. If forgiveness and restoration isn't the goal of anger, it's not godly anger, ever. God's always has a redemptive purpose in his anger. Every instance of God's judgment or wrath or anger you'll find anywhere in the Bible, the very next verse is a verse of hope, restoration, or salvation every single time. And in your life, if your anger episodes are not immediately followed with or brought about by or directed towards some sense of forgiveness and reconciliation, then you're not in an area of godly anger at all. What often ends up happening is that some sense of just venting my anger becomes the purpose of my anger. That I just want to get it out. I just want to be able to like release all of my steam. Could be retaliation or get back, or one of my favorite terms that I found this week was forced empathy. Sometimes the goal of anger is simply forced empathy. What is forced empathy? That's where I'm going to make sure you feel like I feel. I'm going to make sure you know what it feels like, forced empathy. I'm going to make sure you know what it's like. It's where the point of anger is not to reconcile, but is to get you to be forced to have some sort of empathy for what I know, so you know what I'm going through. Anger is a problem when the focus is to put somebody in their place. That's where the goal wasn't reconciliation. The goal was simply to put them in their place and to reestablish the hierarchy, the pecking order, or the rightness of your position, whatever it might be. All of those are signs of aggressive anger that's out of control. And the more that becomes the focus of your anger, the more it's a real issue that you need to address. The more it's something to say, hey, I need to get help with this. For others of you, you look at that and you say, oh, I'm glad I'm not like those people. I'm really glad there's a sermon like this for them. I really hope he's listening right now. If you're thinking that right now, maybe you have an issue with passive-aggressive issues. Passive-aggressive is, now first of all here, keep in mind this. When somebody's passive-aggressive, nobody sees them as an angry person. Nobody's going to call somebody passive-aggressive angry. Rather, they'll say that they are rude, mean, disconnected. Because passive-aggressiveness looks on the outside of just somebody who's just mean-spirited or rude or disconnected. This is the person who will agree in a meeting, but then go out and do everything they can to sabotage it. Yeah, and so you think that they're being mean or vindictive, but what it is they're just passive-aggressive. Their anger is being shown out in a different way. It's called passive-aggressive, or they obstruct progress. They won't communicate. The silent treatment is a big thing for them. Avoidance. What's wrong? I'm fine. What's wrong? Nothing's wrong. I just want you to be happy. Hey, we'll do it your way. We'll just go right ahead. You know, here, you have it. It's all yours. Those are all signs of passive aggressive, where you know somebody's upset, but they're not ever going to give you the satisfaction of talking about what's upset. You might, if you deal with passive aggressiveness, you may do things that are self-defeating. You may sabotage yourself. You may look to self-harm. Feel like as if, this is what, you deserve or have to do, or maybe you're trying to elicit sympathy by hurting yourself or by messing things up for yourself, getting some, it's a different tactic for forced empathy, where you're going to try to get forced empathy out of somebody through a different tactic. Or perhaps another thing that happens often if passive aggressive is an issue is you spend a long time plotting revenge or forced empathy. Where you stew all night and all day thinking about how you're going to get back or what you can do to get them to feel like you feel. Oh, okay. You don't want to say thank you? All right. Well, let's just see what it's like if it doesn't get done. And so you have these, these long plotting sort of things. Now, to all of this, after we see this admonition in Ephesians 4, in your anger, do not sin. It says this, don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, and don't give the devil a foothold. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, and don't give the devil a foothold. Now, does this mean you should never go to bed mad? Yeah, kind of. I say kind of because sometimes this gets misconstrued. It means you should never go to bed angry. Yes, I agree with that. You can never go to bed angry. It doesn't mean that you have to solve the problem that night. And this is where some people get a little mixed up, is You can go to bed not angry and still not have a resolution. Because let's face it, sometimes at 11 o'clock at night, you're not exactly thinking clearly to begin with, and complex problem solving isn't really done very well late at night. There are some times where, you know, I'll go with my kids, for instance. Something will happen, and it'll be infuriating, and it was completely against what I've asked them to do, but I know I am in no frame of mind at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night to administer a fair and just and right discipline for it. And so I say we'll talk about it in the morning. Now, I know for some that's scarier than anything, and maybe that's more cruel punishment than anything else, but I don't want to overpunish, and I don't want to underpunish. I needed some time to think about what is the appropriate response. And there are some times when you have arguments where you need time to cool down. You need that cool-off time. You need time for your emotions to go back down, for you to be able to think of what's the right answer? How can I understand their situation? How can I come at it with a sense of empathy? How can I make my focus reconciliation and forgiveness and not anger and ventilation? If those are your focus, you do need some time. Maybe you do need to sleep it off. But you see, you're not going to bed angry. Go back to God's example. Compassionate, gracious, full of love. Slow to anger and abounding in unfailing love. This is where you go to bed and you say, I love you. We're going to work through this. I don't know what the solution is, but I'm going to pray. I'm going to talk to God about this, and we'll talk about it again tomorrow. So you're not angry at that point. You don't have a resolution, but you're not angry. Now you do need to come back and address it. Because if you don't, then you're going to end up in this passive-aggressive or aggressive place otherwise. So don't let the sun go down your anger. It doesn't mean that you don't go to bed without a resolution. It just means you don't go to bed angry. And it's possible to go to bed, you know, having dealt with your anger, but not have a resolution just yet. Now, secondly, it says, this other thing, it says, do not give the devil a foothold. It's an interesting word, the translated foothold. Foothold is a good word to translate it. It's an opportunistic space. You don't want to give somebody a strategic space. In a lot of games, there are strategic spaces. Checkers, there's a strategic space. You don't want to give your opponent a strategic space in checkers or in chess. You don't want to give them a strategic space in chess. In life, when you harbor issues of anger and you go to bed angry and you have these issues of resentment and anger that brews and stews in your life, whether it be aggressive kind of anger or passive-aggressive anger, what it's basically saying is that you're making a house. You're making a room in your house for Satan just to move right on in. It's you know, anger is no longer a guest suite. It's a permanent room. Oh, yeah, anger lives here. Oh, yeah, Satan, that's his bedroom right over there. Yeah, we live together. We hang out all the time. And the biggest problem with this is anger and love cannot coexist. Anger and love cannot coexist in your life, in your home, in your relationships. It just can't. Because anger is going to squeeze out the love. And the more room you make for anger, the less room you have in your heart, in your life, in your home, in your family for love. And for many of you, you know that right now. And what's keeping you from having unconditional love that you want to have or have the kind of loving family you want to have is there's anger there, whether it be passive-aggressive anger or outright aggressive anger. And you know, anytime you have these issues where you have resentment, it's a foothold. Anytime where you're unwilling to forgive somebody, it's a foothold. Anytime where you have something come up where there's an unresolved conflict, that's a foothold. Anytime where you plan to obstruct or to force empathy somehow, that's a foothold. Anytime that you're just comfortable being angry with somebody, that's a foothold. Every one of these things is a foothold that you're allowing. It's an opportunistic space. It's a strategically opportunistic space that you're basically saying, here, Satan, take this perfectly strategic opportunity in my life to continue to destroy me and my relationships. So he says, don't give him the foothold. You don't give Satan a foothold by simply dealing with the anger. Don't stay angry. Don't harbor the stuff. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. It doesn't mean you've got a resolution right now. But it also means you're not going to go to bed angry. You're not going to allow this to continue to stay day after day after day. Now, as we can clear up this morning, I'm not going to ask, do you have a problem with anger? Because the answer to that for everybody is yes. If you're going to say no, you're in denial. That's a whole other issue. Every one of us has a problem with anger because sinful man cannot produce the righteousness, or cannot produce the righteousness of God. We cannot produce righteous acts through our anger. We just can't do it. There's too much pride involved. There's too much selfishness involved for us to handle anger without having any problems. We just can't do it. At some point, you're going to spill. The question really is, what am I doing about my problems with anger? Do I recognize my problem patterns? Do I know if I have, where am I aggressive and where am I passive aggressive? Oftentimes, you'll be more aggressive with the people that you have a relationship where you are in control over, and oftentimes you'll be more passive aggressive in a situation where you don't have control over. In other words, maybe at work you're passive aggressive, but maybe at home you're aggressive, or vice versa. I don't know. So what's your major pattern with that? And then within that, what were some of the things that we talked about this morning that would say, yes, that's a dysfunctional pattern in my anger? Yes, this is where I've given the devil a foothold in my life. This is where I've given Satan a foothold because of resentment or unwillingness to forgive or this conflict or my plans to obstruct or forced empathy. Where is it that you need to look at this and say, okay, I need to do some renovation in my own heart, in my own life, in my own house to get this anger out because I can't live like this anymore. And this is too valuable of a time and too valuable of a life to allow Satan to have such a strategic opportunity to continue to mess things up. Would you join with me as we close out in prayer? Father, I just ask that you would help each of us just look to our own life right now. Anger is an issue that affects all of us because it is just so easy. It doesn't take any effort to get angry. And we don't even recognize the danger that it causes or the danger that it holds. Every one of us in this room is afraid to ask, what are my dysfunctional anger patterns? How have I hurt you through my anger? Tell me how my anger is sinful. So, Father, may we begin asking those questions to you. May we be able to be moved with such humility that we could begin to ask that question and honestly listen to the answer. That today might be a day where healing begins, where the footholds are taken out so the strongholds can be destroyed. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.